Hello, everyone. Welcome to Coffee Break Feminism. I'm your host, Britt Alexandria, and I will be your headmistress as we explore topics and ideas related to women's studies, feminism, and, well, otherwise. Let's get started. Welcome to Coffee Break Feminism, everyone. This podcast is going to be my corner of the internet where I break down the big ideas within feminism into easy-to-understand segments, with some comedy and opinion along the way. So, let's jump right in. For our first episode together, I wanted to pick a topic that would introduce some terminology right away, and really set the stage for this podcast. A lot of the arguments, tenets, and presentations that we see day in and day out can seem unapproachable. It's okay. This is why we are here. Today, we are going to take a journey through the different waves of feminism within American history. Most likely, you've heard this term before. There are four waves or eras of feminism. What I cannot stress enough is that these waves are all connected. They are all seeking the betterment and equity of women. The first wave of feminism in America is generally agreed to have started at the Seneca Falls Convention in July 1848. Let me set the scene for you. At this point in history, women have no political, social, economic, or really any legal rights at all. There were few jobs available because of the idea that women belonged at home with her family. No openings in the church either, and most biblical interpretation of the day was skewed against women. Generally, a woman had to obey her husband no matter what, so a lot of women's self-worth and self-esteem at the time were at the mercy of men. You can go read the play 27 Wagons to get an idea of how poorly that worked out. At the Seneca Falls Convention, activists Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott, and others drafted the Declaration of Sentiments. Mind you, women were not allowed to speak at this event, and they pretty much forced themselves in. In this declaration, they say, quote, "The history of mankind is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations on the part of man toward woman, having in direct object the establish of an absolute tyranny over her." Like, whoa. Honestly, first wave feminism takes a little time to get going, but by 1910 to 1915, we see some of the first laws concerning work, property, education, and healthcare reform for women. And in 1920, women got the right to vote. Hooray! Well, women who are white did. It wouldn't be until 1965 that everyone would really be able to vote. The 1960s is when we see the second wave of feminism start. If you ask your average Joe about feminism, a lot of their ideas will stem from the feminist ideas and icons of the 1960s through the 1980s. The bra-burning, men-hating, sex-positive, wild woman-type feminists all stem from the ideas circulating here. It's not super accurate, but what are you gonna do? Well, I'll tell you what you're gonna do. After World War II, the 50s were a time when everyone wanted to get back to normal. With that came an emphasis on the nuclear family. Think hardworking dad, loving mom, and two beautiful children in their perfect home. However, women like Betty Friedan, Sylvia Plath, and Elaine Tyler May all wrote about this, quote, "problem that has no name," end quote. This idea that women were not feeling the joy that they were expected to feel. All this idealism about the lives of women clashed with the everyday realities of what really made women happy. What second wave feminism centers around is the inequalities of women within sexuality, family, the workplace, and still various legal rights. We also see the conversation of domestic violence, marital rape, and violence against women as a whole enter into the feminist discussion. It's a common theme throughout feminism, but really the conversation starts here. Thanks to the feminists of the time, we see laws passed like the Equal Pay Act in 1963, Title VII and Title IX, the Education Acts of 1972 and 1974, Roe v. Wade, and more. In 1970, San Diego State University becomes the first college to offer women's studies classes. Before I leave Second Wave Feminism behind, I want to share with you the story of Shulamith Firestone and the National Conference for New Politics in 1967. Raised by her Orthodox Jewish father, Firestone was always trying to fight the sexist treatment she encountered. There are stories from her family members of constant fighting between her and her father because of the religious upbringing, and just stories of like, oh, you should do these chores because you're a girl, and she was just kind of like, no, that doesn't make any sense. That's stupid. She received a BA from Washington University and a BFA in painting from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. At the National Conference for New Politics, the director, William F. Pepper, took to the podium to introduce one of the many speakers. Mind you, Martin Luther King Jr. also spoke at this conference, just to put that into perspective. Firestone and her peeps are waiting for them to be introduced. But they aren't. He introduces someone to speak on Native American issues of the day. I should note that Native American issues are hugely important. We don't take the issues of indigenous people seriously enough in this country. The reason that this particular instance is important is Pepper's reaction when Firestone and her colleagues rush to him for an explanation. Reportedly, Pepper pats Shulamith Firestone on the head and says, "Move on, little girl. We have more important issues to talk about than women's problems." If you were here in the room with me while I record this podcast, you would see the serious eye roll that I give every time I read over that quote. Now, you might be thinking, okay, aside from this jerk, we've passed all of these laws and we've fixed the bigger problems, so that's enough for now, right? Please don't say that. If you're saying that, I'm kind of wondering why you're listening to this podcast. In 1989, Kimberly Williams Crenshaw introduces the idea of intersectionality and layers of oppression, the idea that not only are women oppressed, but that there are layers of oppressive systems that affect people differently. Women are oppressed because they are not men, black people are oppressed because they are not white. If you are black and a woman, then you experience both forms of oppression. I am boiling this down to the most basic of levels, but this idea of levels of oppression and the call for feminism to be more intersectional is present in both third and fourth wave feminism. Third wave feminism really kicks off with some tough females. You have a huge punk rock influence and the tough riot girl attitude and really trying to confront issues of violence against women, reclaiming derogatory terms, and breaking the glass ceiling. Think Kim Gordon personified. If you've been paying attention to the news currently, you've probably heard the name Anita Hill tossed around. No one exemplifies intersectionality and the problems third wave feminists fought against more than this amazing woman. Anita Hill, in October 1991, testified on television that Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas sexually harassed her. This case is important in and of itself, just as our current situation is important. Anita Hill's case is landmark because many people pointed to all of Thomas's work for the black community, and they kind of wanted her to not tell her experience. The idea that his work meant more. This case and Anita Hill's response was pointing to the need for racial equality without dismissing women. Unfortunately, this case and our current case end the same way. The following year, though, we see what is called the Year of Women. Four women are added to the Senate, in addition to the two that were already there. The following years would give us yet another female senator, the first female attorney general, and the first secretary of state. And plus, the big guns, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RBG, and Hillary Rodham Clinton. The people that have this rise to power in the mid-90s, and who we all have many opinions about. But this is where they kind of get their start. And now, here we are. Fourth wave feminism. Between 2010 and now, current feminists have been confronting violence against women since it has reached pandemic proportions. Between Yes All Women, Me Too, and Time's Up, Current feminists have taken to the streets to protest the treatment of women, the privilege that protects men in power, and the lack of belief in survivors that has been only growing, not that it didn't happen before, but only growing in the era of Donald Trump. When I was planning on what I would say for this section, I originally had a different idea in mind. I was going to highlight the women's marches and slut walks, the emphasis on intersectionality, and so much more. However, as I sat down and wrote my game plan for this episode, I drew a blank. The day is gloomy, and every woman I know is still reeling from the fight against Brett Kavanaugh. Instead of my plan, I wanted to echo what women I admire are saying. First of all, this hurts. It all just hurts in ways that I don't think we all truly realize yet. Just the other day, I sat in the restaurant section of a grocery store and just couldn't move. I couldn't think. It all just seemed like too much. And I know that I'm not the only woman who feels like that. And the fight is not over. Those of us with skin in the game, those of us who have fought and told our stories, peeps, the fight is not over. As I look around me, I see strong women and girls that are making change that can't be measured. If all of this history tells us anything, it's that this long fight does yield results. And change is coming. I don't know how fourth wave feminism is going to turn out. I've even heard people say that we're actually in fifth wave feminism, which means that I somehow missed an entire era of feminism. But I do know that we have so many great senators, writers, actresses, actors who are in the fight. We have so many great inspirational people right now that, as worried as I am about certain issues, overall, I'm not worried. We are in a time right now of just so many great people, and I don't think that all of this is going to go to waste. I don't think that all of these loud voices, all of these people that are fighting, I don't think that it's all for naught. That it's just going to be said in an echo of the internet, this echo chamber, and not go anywhere. Change is happening. It really is. And as terrible as it is to feel like it's not doing anything and to live day by day within it, you can see from all of this historical knowledge, all of this history that I'm telling you, that change does come. And I don't know, call me an optimist, but I'm here for the future. I'm thinking that change is coming. And it'll be a rocky road, but I think we'll get there. I think we'll be fine. Well, this has been the very first episode of Coffee Break Feminism. If you like what you heard, leave a review, tell your friends, and subscribe. You can also follow me on Twitter at CBFeminism and on Instagram at CoffeeBreakFeminism. Have something you want me to talk about on the show? Email me at CoffeeBreakFeminism@gmail.com. Coffee Break Feminism is a bi-weekly podcast, so I will see you in 2 weeks. Take care, my peeps. Bye.